Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome to the Inside China Basin Baseball Podcast on the sportsvirus.com, featuring players like all-star catcher Buster Posey.
It's about, you know, just going out and trying to have passion for the game that I've loved since I was a kid.
And Ray Woodson is our regular guest, too.
A lot of ifs, but after a disastrous 2017, the Giants were not going to rebuild. They're at least trying to compete, while many teams in the majors are tanking.
Inside China Basin is brought to you by TPC Harding Park, the only public golf course in San Francisco offering golfers the opportunity to play where the pros play. Coming up, we'll talk about the All-Star Game with Ray Woodson. Plus, we'll hear from a couple of San Jose Giants, Gio Brusa and Heath Quinn. Let's start with Ray Woodson. Well, Ray, it was an All-Star Game that featured 10 home runs, 25 strikeouts, and a post-game discussion about racism. I guess it was filled with a little bit of everything. What'd you think of the All-Star Game in Washington, D.C.?
Well, the game itself was a lot of fun for the second half of the game. Anyway, it really picked up. And isn't that a microcosm of the game of baseball today? Home runs and strikeouts and launch angles and all that. And, you know, made it kind of exciting at the end. You had, three-run homer by Segura, and then you had the Astros hitting home runs, Bregman and Springer. There's a lot of incredible young athletes in the game today, and there's a lot of power in the game, and there's a lot of aggressive approaches. And so we saw all that, and that made it kind of fun. What happened post-game? I don't know if anybody, including Josh Hader, knew that was coming. Here's somebody, and I was reading tweets about this. I guess he had his family at the game. It's the big moment in his life, right? His all-star appearance. And it's got to go down as one of the worst nights in his life. But you know what? What goes around comes around. And it had to do with tweets from 5, 6, 7 years ago. Although he said, you know, something that happened when he was 17. There was also a tweet from 3 years ago about Trayvon Martin.
Yeah, I saw that.
People's attention. So he had to explain it all post-game. I know there's some saying, well, at least he stood up and talked to the media. I think he had to. And now he's going to go through sensitivity training. I read some of those tweets, and they're just absolutely outrageous. And, yes, he was 17 at the time and spouting off. But you know what? There are a lot of young people out there at that age who don't tweet that stuff, right, who don't even think that stuff. So you can't just sit there and say, oh, I was young and I was stupid. Well, you were stupid, that's right, and you were young, but that's not an excuse. Having said that, you know, he's in the major leagues, and he's a representative of a team in a sport. He's got to go through the sensitivity training now. Major League Baseball has decreed that he's going to have to do that. And hopefully he comes out of this a better person. You know, John Rocker didn't come out of it a better person. But hopefully this kid does. And I say kid, he's 24. He's an adult now. And, you know, he's got to take responsibility for what he did when he was 17. When you get up on the big stage, that stuff comes back to haunt you, and it should. So like I said, the tweets were absolutely outrageous. So now it's a matter of how he conducts himself from here on.
Well, I'm not sure that I expected Major League Baseball to do more than the sensitivity training requirement, because I don't know about a suspension at this point after this being, you know, what, like you said, 6 or 7 years ago. But one thing that did rub me the wrong way, Ray, was the statement that the Brewers put out today. I don't know if you saw this, but they said they don't believe the posts are representative of his beliefs. I mean, I think that's BS. Yeah, they're representative of his beliefs. He was 17 years old. It wasn't like he was 8 years old. You know, that's almost graduating high school age. You know, you're about to go to college if you're 17 years old. Those are representative of your beliefs at that time. Now, they can change, but they were representative of his beliefs. And I think the sensitivity training is key here, and hopefully he takes it serious.
Yeah, that's the key now, is what happens from here on. But no, you can't say something like, well, that's not who I am. It is who you are. It's part of who you are. It's part of your past. But what do you do with it? Now, do you evolve? Do you learn from it? And I've known people personally who have carried some pretty bad beliefs in their past, and they did learn from it. They did get out of their bubble. Others don't. So what does he do from here on in? Like, you know, does he end up being John Rocker, or does he end up being somebody who can be an example. And maybe there's others who are like-minded out there who are young, and they can look at Josh Hader and say, yeah, you know, what I'm doing isn't cool. You know, it isn't right. You know, he's got to be an example that way. I don't know if he's going to be, but, you know, suspending, yeah, I mean, that's for something that happened before he was in Major League Baseball. But, you know, it now comes down to what does he do from here on? He better toe the line, though. I mean, because now he's in the fishbowl.
And I don't know that every one of his teammates on the Brewers are going to react the way that Lorenzo Cain did. I mean, Cain basically is saying, you know, he forgives him, or he heard the apology, and people make mistakes and all that, but not everybody's going to react that way.
Cain was extremely diplomatic and classy about it. I wouldn't blame other players from different backgrounds if they were really offended by it and will look at Hader a different way, at least for a while. But, you know, if he is conducting himself in the clubhouse as a good teammate and they know him on a personal level, you know, they can judge that better than you or I can, right? I mean, they know him a lot more closely than you or I can. All we know is that he spouted off these garbage tweets several years ago. And not only did he spout them up, but there were a bunch of them. There was a fusillade of tweets like that. That's what makes it even more disturbing, if that's possible. So, like I said, you know, Lorenzo Cain, maybe that's a statement for public consumption, because you don't want to have stuff getting out in the public that the clubhouse is fractured because of this. You want to keep that in-house if you can and handle it in-house. But it's kind of tough to do that now since it's all over the media.
Well, before the revelation about the tweets, Hader had given up that big 3-run homer to Gene Segura, and it certainly looked like Segura was going to be the MVP of the All-Star game, and then that got wrecked. Scooter Gennett hits that game-tying home run. That was pretty exciting. I mean, the Reds certainly figured prominently in this All-Star game because you had Joey Votto with the error, and that, by the way, I thought that was kind of a tough error to give him. I mean, he's at the railing there. That wasn't an easy play, but he didn't catch it. And, you know, the NL kind of played sloppy defensively overall anyway.
Yeah, and I wouldn't give him an error on that play. I'm sure Votto felt like on his scale it was an error. You could see his reaction. He felt like he should have had it. And then, of course, then what happened after that, the Segura home run. Votto came back and homered, by the way, later in the final inning, but it wasn't enough in the comeback. Scooter Gennett, explain to me Scooter Gennett. Okay, so he's been a pretty good player, pretty good hitter, but he's turned into this beast the last couple of years.
Right.
Explain that to me.
The 4 home run game, remember that?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, there's definitely some pop in that bat. Little guy, right, compared to, I mean, he's Scooter, right? He's somewhat diminutive. He's not Altuve, but he's somewhat diminutive. And, yeah, going to Cincinnati, I guess, would help your power numbers some. But what a story he is. And, you know, that was what the fun part for me is, you're getting some different players now in the All-Star game. But another issue that came up that Rob Manfred touched upon is, yes, you have some new blood in the All-Star game, but there are stars of the game who are there every single year. And why isn't Major League Baseball marketing them better? Talking about Bryce Harper, talking about Mike Trout. And Manfred kind of put it on Trout a little bit. He says Trout has to participate in the marketing of himself, but he's decided that's not how he's going to spend his time. You don't see Trout in a whole lot of commercials and things like that. And I suppose that's prerogative, but you don't just blame the player for the game not marketing itself and not marketing a player. You can still market the player. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You don't have to have his active participation. Sure, it helps. But that kind of sounded a little to me like he's throwing him under the bus.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I read the SI story, and I was really perturbed about the quote that I saw there about Trout being a great player. And he said he's made certain decisions about what he wants to do and what he doesn't want to do and how he wants to spend his free time and how he doesn't want to spend his free time. That's up to him. If he wants to engage and be more active in that area, I think we could help him make his brand really, really big. But he has to make a decision that he's prepared to engage in that area. It takes time and effort. Yeah, to just count on your player, to have the personality that you want to market mm-hmm. him, you should be able to market Major League Baseball. And I got to tell you, I hate to be so hard on Rob Manfred, but there's not one thing that he suggested that I've agreed with. Everything that he comes up with, or that quote right there, it rubs me the wrong way. I'm using that term again. I don't understand. You know, again, he's coming up with this, you know, he wants to quicken the game. I understand that. But he's coming up with, oh, well, we got to, you know, work on the shifts. We got to try to eliminate shifts. And the designated hitter, we want to put that in the National League. And, boy, everything that he comes up with, I seem to disagree with. How about you?
Well, yeah, and then you're extending the game because you have more offense.
Right.
If you get rid of the defensive shifts and bring in designated hitters, you're lengthening the game.
Right.
And I keep saying this. It's not the time of the game. It's the pace. And that's what they have to look at. And they've done certain things. But, at the, you know, the final analysis, the game is what it is. You know, the changes you make, are they going to make every game 2 hours and 5 minutes now? No. And the reason, one of the reasons is pitching changes. Okay, in the 1960s, everybody goes back to the games in the 60s, and you know, I went to a lot of games in the 60s when I was a kid, and they would be 2 hours, 5, 10 minutes. It was a different era where, you know, pitching was dominant, but everybody went the distance. You look at the complete game numbers of guys like Marichal and Koufax and Drysdale and Gibson back in those days. You didn't have pitching changes. That takes up a lot of time right there. And now you have this notion that, you know, starters are only going 4 or 5 innings. Your middle relievers are studs now. And so you're cobbling together these super bullpens, and that means 4 or 5 pitchers in every game. You know, Bruce Bochy's had to do that this year out of necessity, and that's naturally going to slow down the game as far as the pace. That's one of the biggest things right there, I think. And, you know, I mean, as far as the actual pace of the game, well, we went back to the beginning when we were talking about the home runs and strikeouts in the All-Star game. When you have home runs and strikeouts and not a whole lot of action on the field, maybe for some people that's not as watchable too. And that affects the pace and the length of the game. So to me, the bottom line is there's a whole lot of overthinking going on out there.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, the game is great. This All-Star game, to me, was outstanding. I mean, I loved watching some of these matchups. You know, Trout going up against Max Scherzer in the first at-bat, the walk there. The Judge home run. I mean, you know, you had your big players like Judge and Trout hitting home runs. You had your moments for some of the pitchers, some of the strikeouts. They're throwing 98, 99 miles an hour. And I really, really enjoyed the telecast. I just thought they did a great job. Now, some people are going to feel like some of those interviews might be a little too much, but for me, I thought it was outstanding. You know, it was awesome that Major League Baseball allowed those first batters of the game to do the interviews with Ken Rosenthal and Tom Verducci, and the in-game interviews are fun too. I mean, it's an exhibition game, so you don't take it too seriously, and I thought that Harper and Trout handled those interviews really well.
I thought it was fine. I mean, it's an exhibition, right? It's there for the fans. It's for the fans. So anything you can do to get them a little bit closer to the players in that setting, in a game that, you know, yes, I understand for, you know, that for years it was for the World Series home field advantage, but it's basically an exhibition. It has been the whole time. So the whole deal is to get the fans involved and get them closer to the game. So I think that's fine. I thought the stuff with Lindor was real good. I think there was a point where I think it was Eugenio Suarez was the second base, and Lindor and Suarez were chatting Spanish briefly, and then Joe Buck asked him, what did he say? And that's, you know, good little inside stuff. I mean, it was a harmless conversation, whatever they were having, just joking around. But those little touches, I think, are fine. I'm good with it as long as you pick the right players. And for example, a guy like Lindor and you know, Harper and people like that, These are stars of the game that people want to hear from.
Yeah, and then, you know, they had their phones out there with them, which normally you wouldn't see that. You know, Manny Machado taking a photo. Yeah, a selfie with Matt Kemp. That was pretty good.
Well, yeah, well, he's, you know, his future teammate, right? So, I mean, that was some foreshadowing right there. And we can definitely get into that because now, especially because the All-Star game was a little later this year, you've got crunch time coming up as far as the trade deadline, and Machado was first on a lot of people's minds last night as he was there and taking that selfie with Kemp. And sounds like a deal's going to be consummated. Yusniel Diaz, a young outfielder in AA for the Dodgers, seems to be like the prize chip that's going to go to Baltimore. And, you know, that's the Dodgers. They've got a deep farm system. They can make deals like that. So we'll see Machado moving on here shortly. And the thing for Machado, and people ask us about the Giants, you know, should they make a run at Machado? Well, he wants to play shortstop because that's where the money is, right? That's where he has his most value going into free agency in the offseason. Philly's made a run at him. They're probably going to make a run at him again, serious run in the offseason. So, you know, as much as we talk about Bryce Harper and what's going to happen with him, Machado's going to be the interesting guy, I think, in the offseason as well. Because you're talking about somebody who plays a prime position, can also play third base, and is having a great year and is in his prime at the age of 26. It could be that he gets signed first, and that sets the bar. And what's that bar going to be? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and I wonder. I mean, it's pretty much an embarrassment of riches for the Dodgers if they do get Machado long-term, let's say, because you already got Seager and you've got Justin Turner. You know, the left side of the infield is just loaded. I don't know why you even need him then. You need him now for sure because Seager's out for the year, but I'm not sure about going forward.
Yeah, well, again, he's shortstop. Do you want to move Seager? You know, that's what you got to look at. I tend to think that this is a short-term rental for the Dodgers, and because they have so much in their farm system, you know, that they can stand to unload somebody so they can make this run. They're certainly, in the last couple of years, they've tried to tighten it up financially, but are they setting themselves up to try to make a run and because they don't want to get the repeater tax that is, you know, so egregious, going up to 50%? Do they want to make a serious run in the offseason? You would think they would if things work out. It's going to be a real bidding war for this guy. I mean, Justin Turner, he's getting older. You know, if you want to move Machado over to third base, if he's amenable to that, but it sounds like he wants to market himself as a shortstop, that kind of complicates things. Sounds like he'd be a better fit for somebody else, but I could see why the Dodgers would want to make a run at him, that's for sure.
Speaking of shortstops, Brandon Crawford, his first start in the All-Star game at shortstop, and, you know, it didn't go so well at the plate, although his second at-bat when he struck out, that pitch was way outside, and Ted Barrett called him out on strikes. Kind of felt bad for Brandon on that one, but I'm sure he really enjoyed it. I mean, all these guys, they love playing in the All-Star game, getting to talk to the other players. I mean, as Mike Trout said, how can you not have fun with this? They were asking him, I guess Joe Buck asked him a question about, like, do you really enjoy this? And he's like, what kind of a question is that? Of course I do. Everybody, you know, everybody loves it. I mean, I guess, you know, maybe there's some players that have been so many times that they kind of miss the time off. But I think for Crawford, he really enjoyed it. And I think the Giants should be happy that Posey didn't go because, you know, with that hip issue, it probably was better for him to get the cortisone injection, take care of that, hopefully come back strong for the second part of the season.
Oh, yeah. If they're going to make any kind of run at all, they got to have Posey healthy and driving the ball once again, which has been difficult with the hip issue. And for Crawford, I mean, that's a high moment in his career. Of course, he's won 3 World Series titles, but to be the starter at shortstop in the All-Star game, come on now. That's got to be a huge highlight for a guy who has a lot of hardware in his cabinet and his den already. So I'm sure it was great for him, no matter, you know, what happened in the game. All I can say about Ted Barrett's strike zone is that it was Eric Gregg-like, you know, in the
right.
In the World Series with Greg Maddux and company. I mean, that was a wide strike zone last night, but who cares? I mean, it was the All-Star game. So that's one of the reasons, by the way, there were a lot of strikeouts. That was a very bizarre strike zone by Ted Barrett. But, you know, good for Crawford. The Giants didn't figure prominently in this one. There have been times in the past where they have, with Crawford, with Posey, with Sandoval, Melky Cabrera a few years ago. I mean, there was a time when the Giants dominated the All-Star game. But I think for fans, I don't know if they missed Posey this time. It would have been nice to see him, but it's more important to get him healthy and get him some rest. And, you know, you get that extra day now. They're not playing on Thursday. You wait till Friday. And I think for Posey and especially for the Giants bullpen, that is significant.
Well, speaking of the Giants bullpen, both of us pretty much agree that here before the trade deadline, the Giants need to probably get another arm and probably get a right-handed bat. I think one of the big issues, Ray, isn't so much who they're going to get. It's who are they going to drop from the roster? Because I'm looking at Hunter Pence being dead weight and Jeff Samardzija, too. I mean, he's had injuries, but he also hasn't been effective. And even, I don't know that Ty Block belongs on this roster. I think maybe they get somebody better there. Those are kind of the three guys. I hate to say it. They're all really cool guys, but they're just not contributing. What do you think? What happens with this roster going forward?
Well, I think if you get another arm in the bullpen, maybe you're using Ty Block a little bit less. I think he's been somewhat useful for Bruce Bochy as a guy who can long relieve and has done a great job in a couple of games lately. But overall, does he fit into their long-term plans with the arms they have coming up? And you've probably seen Sean Anderson, a guy who's really climbing up the ladder in the minor leagues. Guy was obtained in the Eduardo Nunez trade with the Red Sox. That's another arm that's coming up. So that's an area where they might be able to make a deal. Samardzija, what are you going to do with him right now in the middle of this $90 million contract? And he's hurt again. I mean, he's kind of fallen off a cliff this year. There were times last year where he looked absolutely dominant, but it's not happening this year. So what do you do with him? I mean, you deal him. You've got to pretty much gobble up the rest of his contract if you want to make a roster spot. Pence, I mean, let's face it. He's near the end. He's had trouble making solid contact the last couple of years. It's even worse now. That's an area they have to address in left field. What are they going to do? Are you going to give the job to somebody like Austin Slater? Is there any help coming from the farm? Chris Shaw got off to a slow start this year. He doesn't look like anything like a major league lock. Mac Williamson, man, I mean, he's had some terrible luck as far as injuries and then the concussion. But then he gets to play and he goes 33, I think it was. So he can't get any kind of traction. So, you know, the other issue for the Giants, and I mentioned the Dodgers trying to stay under the luxury tax. The Giants are trying to stay under that repeater tax, too, so that they can be active in the free agent market next year. Whether it's, I know we joke about Bryce Harper. I think in all likelihood, he stays with the Nationals, but that's just my spitballing. But you want to make a serious run and be in the mix for him or for Machado or some of these other free agents that are coming up. You've got to keep that in mind. So it would be nice if you could offload some contract in doing so, but you can't with Pence. You can't with Samardzija. That makes it a little difficult. So I don't get the feeling that unless there's another major league player that you're thinking of dealing on your roster, how you're going to make that fit. So I don't know if they make two moves. I don't see that happening. It's going to be either or, the right-handed bat or the relief pitcher. And I think the way they're looking at it, and fans aren't going to like this, but the way they're looking at it is they're hoping that Panic and Longoria come back and are healthy and provide some of that offense from both sides of the plate here in the second half, and that the key is going to be getting that bullpen bolstered. You get Strickland coming back, and you deal for an arm, and I've heard a couple of names that the Giants have been connected with, and that you have a little more strength at the back end of the bullpen, and we saw signs of some wear and tear with this bullpen, and you're going to see it more and more if Bochy has to keep using these guys. And then you have a pitcher like Melanson who you can't count on day to day. He can't go back to back. So you definitely need that bullpen depth. And with a manager like Bochy, that works to his strength, that he can manipulate guys when he has, you know, more tools in the toolbox. So that would be my guess. Make a deal for a reliever and you can still stay under the tax.
I really hope they don't trade Sean Anderson. Now, I have not seen him yet because he was in Double-A, but he pitched in the Futures game, actually got the win, gave up a home run, gave up a hit to his fellow Giants minor leaguer, Elliot Ramos, by the way. But, I mean, this guy has a 96-mile-an-hour fastball, a great slider. He's going to be pitching with Sacramento now. They brought him up to Triple-A. I'd hate to see them trade him. I really think he could fit in nicely with the Derek Rodriguez's and Andrew Suarez's of the Giants now. Another guy that could come up quickly here through the farm system. A nice piece that they got from the Red Sox in that Eduardo Nunez trade. So I'd hate to see them trade him. I know you got to give up something to get something, but man, hopefully he's not a guy that they deal.
I would hope so too. From what I've seen in the scouting reports, he kind of pans out to be a middle of rotation starter. So that's pretty nice projection for him. And you talk about an heir apparent to Samardzija, who's been in the middle rotation, that would be one of the guys. And then, you know, the other angle as far as approaching free agency or dealing with the luxury tax is maybe instead of spending the money on a free agent, you re-sign Bumgarner, who's coming into the last year of his deal with the club option and has been such a bargain. But you're talking about a pitcher who's going to be in his 30s. And that's always risky when you're talking about a long-term contract with a lot of money. And, you know, you've kind of seen that with Cueto. They're going to be dealing with Cueto's contract, too. And into his 30s, he's been dealing with injuries, too. So that's going to make it a tough decision. You talk about one of the all-time franchise icons, Madison Bumgarner. You have to look at the possibility that you might have to deal him, too, and go in another direction. But the problem is, if you mean to continue to contend, you need an ace, and he's your ace when he's healthy.
Yeah, and he's been pitching well. I can't see them dealing him. I do see them signing him to an extension at some point. He's just done so much for the San Francisco Giants. Well, Ray, second half, really not second half. It's, you know, they've already played past the halfway point, but the post-All-Star game section of the schedule coming up here, and it's not going to be easy. The A's certainly handled the Giants winning 2 out of 3 in San Francisco, so to play in Oakland, that's going to be tough. Some big crowds expected there. And then Seattle, one of the better teams in baseball for the Giants playing on the road. It's not going to be easy here.
Yeah, it's that the schedule does toughen up. The one nice thing is they haven't had to travel a lot. They've stayed in the same time zone. That's a little bit helpful. The Mariners have been tough. I think they're not as good as their record. I think the A's can catch them as far as the wild card. And I think the A's ought to be super aggressive. Just to backtrack a little bit on Bumgarner, when I say they have to consider it, I think as far as trades and so forth in the offseason, I think every club has to consider all the options. You have to play out all the scenarios. But if you ask me to bet about it, yeah, I'd say it's not going to happen. They're going to bring him back for long term because he is a franchise icon. But I've been saying to people all along, you know, a trade's not going to happen. But it's like we said in the last podcast, it depends on what's being offered, right? I mean, if it's a massive haul that you think is going to make you better in the long run with younger players, you absolutely have to consider that. But, if I'm going to bet on it, yeah, Bumgarner is going to stay. And he's going to be key in the second half if he continues to pitch well and get a little more offensive support. I mean, there are so many games where they don't score. You know, there are games where they bust out. But it's like, especially in generating offense, sometimes once they get it rolling, yeah, they're able to put up 6, 7, 8 runs. But it's a hard task for them just to get rolling offensively in certain games. So they've got to get some more consistency there. And you hope Panic and Longoria come back and make a contribution in the second half. And I kind of think that's what they're counting on. And maybe somebody else from the farm system as well. And by the way, Duggar has looked pretty good so far. And so you've got a little injection of new blood that way. Does he continue and make a contribution? Because as we said before, he solves two problems for them in center field and as a leadoff hitter. But, the schedule gets a little bit tougher. They've been okay so far, certainly better than last year, still in the mix. But, you know, it's coming down to the trade deadline. And right now, you got to be a buyer if you're the Giants. The problem for them is, you know, early in the season, it looked like we'd have a lot of bottom feeder teams and a lot of dominant teams, and you have a few teams that have a tremendous record. But now there are 16 teams within 5 games of a playoff spot. It's a lot of buyers. And there are a lot of teams out there who are going to be looking for bullpen help. So that's going to complicate it for the Giants.
It looks like the Dodgers are going to be tough to beat, too, down the stretch as far as winning the division.
They're not catching the Dodgers. If the Dodgers stay healthy, they're not going to catch them.
It's going to be
tough. The Dodgers are so much more talented. It's about the wild card now.
Yeah, I agree with you there. All right, Ray, look forward to talking to you again next week as we get into the second part of the season.
All right, sounds good. And by the way, just so folks know, Joe Castellano is pounding the ball off the tee. I can attest to that from yesterday. He's hitting it longer than I've ever seen him hit it. I think he's juicing.
Yeah, just like those guys in the All-Star game. They had a juiced ball. I don't know if they were juicing, but they had a juiced ball in the All-Star game, maybe.
Yeah, well, hey, it's for the fans. You got to have a little fun, a little action. And so 10 home runs. Yeah, a lot of pitchers with sore necks, but it was a fun game.
That's Ray Woodson. He joins us every week here on thesportsvirus.com. Coming up, we'll hear from San Jose Giants first baseman Gio Brusa. But first, I want to tell you about my favorite golf course, TPC Harding Park in San Francisco. Live in San Francisco and love to play golf? Visit TPC Harding Park and purchase your 2-year resident card, giving you immediate savings on golf and other programs at the park. Cut your green fees in half by purchasing your card today. Visit www.tpc.com/Harding Park for more information. Now let's get to the conversation with San Jose Giants first baseman Gio Brusa. Gio, you've been hitting a bunch of home runs this year, a 3-home run game. You're one of the top home run hitters in the league. So what's been the key to your success?
Just keep my faith first and just staying, in the moment. I'd say those are kind of the two things, just working hard every day.
You're a switch hitter, so how challenging is it to keep both sides of the plate going?
Yeah, you definitely have to give both sides equal treatment. So, I just try to take as many swings right-handed, if not a little bit more, than I do at the left side because I get so many more at-bats the left side. But, I try to keep both swings the exact same. So when I do that, it kind of makes it easy that by working on one side, I work on the other.
When did you start switch hitting?
12 years old. Yeah.
Wow. It's hard. It's definitely no matter what level you're playing to hit from both sides of the plate. What made you do it? Was there a favorite player?
Family friend, actually. I had a terrible time hitting a left-handed curveball in Little League. So a family friend of ours whose son, his name's Ty Kelly, he's in the big leagues right now. His dad told my dad, you should try switch hitting. So we did. And I'll tell you, it wasn't pretty at first, but I'm fortunate. I had a very patient dad to stick with through me. And it's worked out all right so far.
One of the great moments this season was early in the season when you hit for the cycle and your teammate Jalen Miller also hit for the cycle in the same game. I don't know, did that take anything away from your cycle because you had both of you?
Absolutely not. I think it made it way more special. I guess we're the first two to ever do it on the same team. And also just to be able to share that moment with a teammate is extremely special. I'd never done that before. He'd never done that before. So it was just double the excitement.
When you have three of the hits, people are always wondering, are you looking for that other hit? What are you thinking about? I think it was a triple that finished it off.
Honestly, I had no idea until I came back in the dugout. My teammates started hugging me and jumping on me. And I thought it was just because I had a good hit and scored a run, but then they all told me it's because I hit for the cycle. So they all knew it before I did, and I think that's really special to have a team so invested in each other. We all share each other's success. So that was really cool.
You mentioned your dad, and you grew up in Stockton. Your dad played football in college, and then he was a football coach in high school. You played high school football. What was that like playing for your dad?
Nothing better. Some of my best memories were either on the football field with him, whether it was as a little one or playing for him or even in the batting cages. So, he's my best friend, and it was just truly memorable and, something I'll never forget.
I know you were a quarterback for a while, but you switched positions?
Yes, I was. Played quarterback my freshman, sophomore year. I wasn't bad. I was all right. And then went to receiver my next 2 years and just had some fun running some routes.
Then you stayed in the same area, went to play baseball at Pacific, and you played for a famous coach in Ed Sprague who played in the World Series in the major leagues. What was that experience like?
Oh, fantastic. Honestly, he was a huge part of the reason why I went to Pacific. I admired him growing up and always, dreamt and prayed to go there. And I was fortunate he gave me that opportunity. And to this day, he's still the best coach I've ever played for baseball-wise.
I would think that you had a nice advantage playing for somebody who played in the big leagues like that. Were there some things that you were able to glean from him that maybe somebody else wouldn't get in college?
Oh, for sure. His vocabulary is above and beyond. The guy is a true wizard. The guy's a genius. So being exposed to a professional side of baseball, honestly, as a college kid, kind of has helped make this transition a little easier. So, yeah, it was great.
All right, let's talk about what's going on here and your career. So you played in San Jose last year. You repeat in the league. Do you feel like now you're sort of mastering this league? What are your goals the rest of the season?
I feel like I learned a lot last year. I'm still learning a lot, especially new position. I'm playing first base now. So just being able to get more and more experience there every single day has been fantastic. And, my only goal is just to learn and get better every single day. I don't really have any, number expectations or goals, but really just try to stay present in the moment.
What's the hardest part about playing first base?
Ooh, I got to tell you what, it's all pretty hard. But the more you're there, the easier it gets. So I'm enjoying it. I'm fortunate. I have a great, coaching staff that works with me every day, no matter what goes on out there. So I'm having a lot of fun with it.
Is footwork one of those things that you just have to get used to?
Oh, yeah. Footwork and, just I'd say the pace of game. It's a little quicker in the infield than it is over in the outfield. So, you know, knowing the bunt Ds, the first and thirds and all that stuff, and just being able to make decisions on your toes like that. So, but the more experience, the better you get.
And you're an infielder's best friend. I mean, if you save them from an error, they got to like you.
Yes, and I've learned that. So I'm trying to get good over there to help everybody else because they all help me. So I want to do the same for them.
All right, Gio, thanks a lot for the time. Really appreciate it. Good luck.
Awesome. Thank you.
That's San Jose Giants first baseman Gio Brusa. I also had a chance in San Jose to sit down with outfielder Heath Quinn. He had a number of his teammates looking on in the San Jose Giants dugout. Here was that conversation. All your teammates, just about everybody's here watching you. That's the first thing. How do you feel about the support you're getting while you're doing this interview?
The support's great. You know, I have all my friends here watching me. Obviously, they want to hear us talk, but yeah, it's good to have them watching and see what you have to say.
All right. They're very happy with that answer. So what's been the biggest difference for you this year compared to last year? I know you were hurt last year. That has to be one of them, but are there some other mechanical adjustments that you made?
I made a couple mechanical adjustments this offseason, but really I'm just trying to take it one day at a time. Stick to my approach to the plate. Like I said, just try to get my pitch, not chase out of the zone, and just try to battle every day.
How frustrating was it last year? Because you had a couple of injuries. You had the broken hand at the beginning of the year. You had a shoulder situation as well. So, I mean, it had to be hard to play through all that.
Yeah, it was frustrating just to, you know, get hurt in spring training and not get off to the start I wanted. But, you know, it's good to be healthy this year and, you know, playing with a good group of guys. And we're just having a good time.
Yeah, why is this group special? I've never done an interview like this with all these guys watching like this. Seems like you guys really do enjoy each other's company.
Yeah, we really do. We mess around a lot and have a good time and just give each other a hard time. But it's a fun team.
Let's talk a little bit about your background. I know you went to Samford there in Alabama. What kind of a baseball school is that?
You know, I like to think we have a good program. Coach Dunn does a great job in developing the talent we have. You know, obviously we're not the biggest school in Alabama, but I think he does a great job in developing players. I mean, he's had a ton of players drafted over the past, you know, 8-9 years, and it just really shows in their record every year, and them actually, you know, going to the regional this year.
I know you got drafted coming out of high school, so what led to your decision to go there? How much do you think that paid off to get that college experience?
Yeah, I think that was definitely beneficial. You know, like I said, Coach Dunn does a great job with development. It was nice to be able to play at home, get to go home every weekend or so. And, just having my family there was a big emotional support as well.
Culturally, I would think it's very different there in Alabama than, you know, playing here in the Cal League out in California. So what are some of the things that you like, or what are some of the things that were maybe hard to get adjusted to?
Being from the East Coast, I've never been to California before, and you know, getting out here to come play baseball is definitely something cool, and you know, see all the different stuff, especially on the off days, you get to go explore around. It's been great so far. The weather's fantastic, and got to meet a lot of cool people.
You played in the Cape Cod League, and I would think that was a real good preparation league because you got the wood bats, and you know, you'd been playing aluminum bats, of course, in college. So did it prepare you pretty well?
I think it did. You know, playing the whole summer with wood bats kind of gets you used to it. But, you know, a lot of these guys, we grow up playing travel ball tournaments and stuff, and we use wood bats a lot in that too. So I think that definitely helps prepare us for professional baseball.
How much baseball did you watch growing up? Did you pattern yourself after any major league players?
Not really. I watched a little bit. You know, I played a couple of sports growing up, so I watched a lot of different stuff. But I didn't really pattern my game after anybody, but I like watching the Braves a little bit when I was younger, and then the Red Sox for, you know, the past 10, 15 years.
Red Sox? Why the Red Sox?
I don't know. I just I liked a couple of their players, David Ortiz. I really liked one of their pitchers, Papelbon. I just like watching them grow up and really was a big fan of Fenway.
What were the other sports that you played?
I played football and basketball.
So was there any chance that you could have played either one of those sports in college?
Probably not. That wasn't very good. But I enjoyed playing them and, you know, big football fan, Alabama football fan right now as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, that makes sense. All right. So what's the funniest thing that's happened with this team? I know you guys take long bus trips, especially down to Southern California. You're together all the time. There's got to be something funny that happened that you could share with us.
Put me on the spot with that one. We all like pulling pranks on each other and doing different things. I can't really think of one. I mean, some of them probably not appropriate, but I don't know. We do it day in and day out. There's something funny we're laughing about.
Bus trips are pretty good though, right? I mean, even though they're long, you guys get on there, you play cards, you joke around. As long as the air conditioning's working and the bus is actually working, it's not bad, right?
Yeah, I think it depends on the bus too. Yeah, they've been fine so far. You know, Nate plays some movies sometimes, and you know, we'll play games and do different stuff on the bus, try to kill some time. But yeah, they're not too long in the Cal League.
All right, Heath, thanks a lot for the time, and good luck the rest of the season.
Thanks, appreciate it.
That's San Jose Giants outfielder Heath Quinn. Want to thank him and Gio Brusa, also from the San Jose Giants, and Ray Woodson for joining us today. Coming up next week, we'll hear from Joe Rizzo from the San Jose Giants, and we'll talk to Ray Woodson again as the Giants are on the road taking on the Oakland A's and then the Seattle Mariners coming out of the All-Star break. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to Inside China Basin on thesportsvirus.com.